You know, my name is RJ Sin, obviously. I'm born and raised in Oakland. I was born at Highland Hospital, which is in East Oakland. And then I lived out in West Oakland for a good part of my life. And then my family moved out to East Oakland when I was about in the fifth grade. So since then, you know, I've been out here. My family, they were refugees. So they immigrated here from Cambodia, you know, during the Khmer Rouge era. So a lot of my family, you know, my grandparents, my aunties and uncles, both of my parents, my dad and my mom, they met out here in America. But, you know, they fled a war-torn country. So I was born here in America. I was born and raised in Oakland. And, you know, I guess for me growing up, you know, I want to say like probably like any other, you know, Cambodian Americans, you hear so much of the war stories of what took place, you know, during that time and, you know, about our own people killing each other and things like that. And, you know, a lot of those war stories and a lot of what happened during that time kind of stuck with me, you know, and my parents would share those stories all the time about them working on the rice fields, you know, them traveling, you know, running, basically escaping in the jungle, hiding out, not getting caught by the Khmer Rouge soldiers and stuff like that. And, you know, a lot of those things, it's, you don't realize how heavy that is, you know, until you're really able to comprehend it. And I know growing up, you know, especially being born here in America, where the lifestyle was so different compared to what Cambodia was and what Cambodia is now, you know, it was so different. So I wasn't always in tune with what my parents would talk about. And as you get older, you kind of just start to understand, you start to comprehend, and you have different perspectives. And then you see like, wow, like what they went through was just, it was just really crazy. So, and I understood like, it was like a rite of passage almost when you're that young and you're getting these stories, because, you know, our ancestors, our parents, you know, my uncles, my aunties, they're not going to live forever, you know? So when they go, you know, I've lost a lot of my grandparents already, a lot of my ancestors already. There's no one to keep that story, no one to tell that story. So, you know, I felt like it was almost my responsibility to not only harbor it, but to tell it, you know, from my perspective through their lens. I don't know if that makes sense. And, you know, so growing up, I was, you know, growing up in Oakland, you know, everyone always talked about how rough Oakland streets was and things like that. You know, I was very sheltered growing up. I would like to say I was very cultured as far as, you know, I went to the temple a lot. You know, we did a lot of ceremonies, watched a lot of karaoke. I was very immersed in the Cambodian culture at home. But at the same time, you know, I believe my family also opened my eyes up to, you know, the culture here in America too, you know, pop music, Madonna, 80s and 90s, a lot of that stuff was popular around my house, you know? So when I would stay home for the weekend, you know, growing up 10, 11 years old, you know, my dad's playing Cincy Samut, which is a very popular singer from the golden era. So I get that at home. And when I'm at my grandparents' house, when I was growing up, they practically raised me. So, you know, when my grandparents were alive, I would be referred to as the youngest. So my nickname is Aon, which means baby in Cambodian. So I was always the baby of the family. I was always with my aunties. I was always with my grandparents. And, you know, when I was there, my aunties, who were only a few years older than me, they were very into like, you know, Cyndi Lauper, Madonna, you know what I mean? Like A-ha and stuff like that. And it was the time, but I remember even being as young as I was, you know, I vividly remember all that. I'm telling you, like, I remember, you know, the socks over the tights, you know, and I remember the MC Hammer pants and stuff like that. And I just, you know what I mean? So I got exposed to that part of America, that pop culture art early, you know? So like my musical taste, you know, stems as deep as that, you know. And then while I'm at home, I get, you know, Cincy Samut, I get Bayanron, I get Rosalie Satia, you know, you get so many different Cambodian artists, you know. My dad would listen to Kaeo Sarat, who was from Mat Tha Bong as well. That's where my dad is originally from. And, you know, his father, my grandfather, they were from Mat Tha Bong, which is a province in Cambodia. And it's referred to as, I don't want to offend anyone, but it's referred to as Land of the Musicians. You know, a lot of artists and stuff like that comes from there. So they will always say that about my dad, like, oh, he's from about the bone. So he knows music. He has an ear for music and things like that. As far as like music goes, though, like I wasn't really immersed in making it, you know. So I grew up playing sports, grew up listening to music. I love it. I had a passion for singing. I wrote a lot of poems. I was in choir and everything like that. But I never thought to take it seriously. You know, things didn't click for me during that time. You know, so it didn't really click for me. And, you know, I think it really wasn't until, I think it was about after high school, I, you know, started pursuing music a little more seriously, you know, hooked up with some people, started kind of just, you know, you do what pretty much every artist do. You start making songs and in your bedroom and your friend's room, and then you come up with material, and then you hit a wall and you're like, wait, is this what I want to be talking about? You know, when I started music, the Bay Area was really big with the hyphy movement. The hyphy movement was like everything during that time. You know, I was like, man, this is what I like. Like, I like this type of music. You know, I like having fun, Ghost Riding the Whip, things like that. You know, E-40, The Team, Keek the Sneak, they were big at that time. And I was loving it. You know, I was an Oakland boy. You know, that was my thing. You know, so I kind of rode that wave, you know, I didn't really understand much. You know, I was young. I was 17, 18, fresh out of high school. And, you know, I would say a lot of that also had to do with, you know, there was definitely some identity issues there because I didn't really know what I related more to, you know, as far as that goes. And I could touch on that a little more, too. And I don't want to ramble so much, but I got into music. I really probably took it seriously when I was about like 23. It was kind of like I had an epiphany one day and I was like, wait a minute. Like, you know, I have this ability to just storytell. You know what I mean? And I think when I started out, you know, both of my younger brothers, who's very pivotal to my music career. And they were just like, you can really rap, you know what I mean? And you should talk about some things that matters and things like that. And I already, at the time, I had a good amount of supporters. You know, I had family and friends who would always just say, oh, we know RJ's going to do music. He can rap, he can sing. But my music was different at the time when everyone was on board with it. You know, I wasn't talking about kind of, you know, the things I was shifting towards, you know, so I was going from like, you know, hyphy stuff, party music to like more serious life issues, you know, and I started opening up about being on welfare. You know, I started opening up about growing up in public housing. You know, I started opening up about just how hard it really was being a Khmer male and growing up in Oakland, growing up in the streets of Oakland, you know, so I started to shift my topics a little more about that. And it just, you know, from that, you know, I just became someone that could just tell everyone's story. And I think that's how folks were able to resonate with me. I think that's really my story, is that I just touched on subjects and topics that I believe people want to talk about, you know, and they may not know how, or they may not have the avenue or platform. And I just started to realize that by me just speaking my story, it just allowed people to know, like, okay, well, I'm not the only one going through it. I'm not the only one feeling oppressed by Section 8, or I'm not the only one feeling, or I'm not the only one being on welfare and things like that. And I just kind of took those issues and kind of made it, you know, be like a proud thing. You know what I mean? I didn't feel like you needed to be ashamed of being on Section 8, being on welfare, growing up in public housing, going to public schools with no books and things like that. And, you know, that was always like the stigma, you know what I mean? If you did any of that, you couldn't amount to anything. And, you know, there was no, anything good would never come out of it. And I didn't feel that way. You know what I mean? Like I was able to escape, you know, gang life. Gang was big too. But everybody knows in the Bay Area, it's more about, you know, what street, what block you from, you know, banging turf. It wasn't much so about colors. However, being Cambodian, it's all about colors, you know what I mean? And, you know, my parents did really well in terms of sheltering me from that and allowing me to build my own path, you know? So I shifted, I shifted perspectives. I kind of had an epiphany, started to talk about just some of the more issues I was dealing with as a Cambodian male. And, you know, the rest was kind of history. I was just able to, I just found myself in different performance spaces, performing at different colleges, different events, meeting different people. You know, I think I really got my push. You know, I met Pratch Lee, who was like, always been a hero of mine. And I always listened to his stuff growing up. And I just ran into him one day. And I remember I was just super starstruck. You know, I was at that point, like I said, where I was shifting music and I wasn't sure, like, if this is what I wanted to do, because I was playing my stuff for people and no one understood, you know. And I felt like it was kind of lonely for a bit, because I was like, man, no one understands this direction and no one understands why I feel so compelled to talk about my family's history. But then it wasn't only that, I was talking about, you know, Cambodian people's history as well. And I just, you know, felt like a lot of those things needed to be put into light. And when I met Pratch, you know, I had already made my first album. It was, I titled it Ratha after my name, which was Raised by Refugee, True to His Arts and Culture. That was the acronym for it. And I just remember seeing Pratch, and I just remember the first thing I did was I was just like, hey, I'm a big fan. Can you listen to my CD? And I just remember him giving me this look like, who the fuck is this kid? Like, just not saying what's up, no respect. You just want to come and give me a CD? And I was just like, I'm just a big fan, Pratch. I've been listening to you. And I feel like if someone would understand, you would. And I gave him my CD. And I just remember he was very standoffish to me. And he was just like, all right, yeah, man. Okay, cool. Nice to meet you. And I was just like, hey, can we swap information? Can I like give you my number or anything like that? He's like, take my email down and email me. And it was very short and he was very standoffish. And I just remember, I'm like, this fucking dude, you know, I was just like, I'm such a fan of this guy. And then, you know, then I emailed him and I didn't hear anything back. And then I believe it was like 2 weeks later, he emailed me back and he was like, I listened to your entire CD. He's like, I'm blown away. He was like, who makes your beats? You know, he's like, your content, your beats. He's like, everything is just, he's like, it's amazing. He's like, I want to work with you. He's like, would you be open to working? But he's like, I want to give you some real constructive criticism. And it was about from that point, he really took me under his wing, you know, and really kind of coached me on how I wanted to pursue this career in making music, you know. And, you know, along the way, I met so many good people. You know, I met, you know, JL Jupiter, you know, Bochan. I remember performing with Laura Mam. And, you know, it started to feel good because now you were like, as an artist, you're like, hey, I'm not the only one talking about stuff like this. And I'm not the only one with this type of music. You know, there are other people who are bringing certain issues to light, you know, and speaking on how proud they are to be, you know, Cambodian and stuff like that. So, you know, I think meeting Pratch was one of the deal breakers for me. You know, I also met Bochan coming up and she was very like a big sister, like really also took me under her wing and gave me a lot of guidance. And she's a singer from Oakland as well. So that's how I linked up with her. Pratch is originally from Long Beach, JL's from Philly. So I'm all of a sudden like getting mentored by like three of the biggest kings and queens in a game. And it just felt like things were aligning. I felt validated, like, okay, I did the right thing because now I'm in spaces with, you know, these people that I've looked up to who has made so many changes and so much impact on the game. And now I'm just, you know, lucky enough and fortunate enough to be in the same room. And it was just, yeah, the rest was just kind of history, you know, and just, yeah, I was trying not to go so much on a tangent, but I hope I kind of touched on some of the stuff, you know, so, yeah.
A lot of times, you know, our elders, they talk about all these stories and it's a part of us, you know what I mean? Those are our stories too, because once our parents open up, once our elders open up about that, you know, we become this vessel for them. And then now it's up to us to continue to pass those stories down, you know? So the stories that my great-great-grandfather told my grandfather, told my pops, and my pops told me, I told them to my brothers, you know, I'm going to tell it to my son. And like those stories, they become us, you know? So when I said, is this story my perspective? I just tell it in a way where I can metaphorically explain it and interpret it in my way, but not throwing away what they told me. And because that story, it becomes a part of you. It becomes a part of me. And it, their stories are our stories. And that's why all three of us are here. You know, we have these stories that are passed on for generations, and it's up to us, if not the next person, to continue to grow and bring change and bring awareness about all the things that have happened. Because us three know how much has happened. And, you know, if we don't do anything about it, if we don't take it on as like it's our own, then it's a repeated cycle, you know. To do it, we want to do it right, because it wasn't like there wasn't rappers before me. It wasn't like there wasn't people sampling Cambodian beats before me. It was like, I just felt like, all right, you know, as far as me getting hate and things like that, I feel like that's always going to happen. Like, I can't please everybody, you know what I mean? And I know when I initially wanted to start, I started singing, I started making Cambodian covers, you know what I mean? And this was a time where Cambodian covers wasn't what it is now. And I just wanted to do it because I grew up and my dad was in a band, and, you know, I admired my dad, and he played a lot of Cincy Samoa songs, you know, and I grew up singing them. And so I just, you know, I made some cover videos and things like that, and it wasn't perceived well, you know, I mean, people were calling me out, you know, stuff like that. Like, just an example, they were just like, you know, OMG, what the F are you doing? Like, you need to leave that alone. Like, you shouldn't be singing stuff like that. And, you know, as blunt and broad as those comments are, there's layers to that, you know what I mean? And I didn't really know how to dissect that. I was just kind of like, okay, maybe they just don't like, because I'm trying something, you know what I mean? But it was like, and then you start seeing comments like, leave the culture alone. You know, this ain't for you, you know what I mean? You get a couple of those, and, you know, you get people telling you, nah, don't even sing. You're better off just rapping. Stick to the rapping, bro. You shouldn't be touching the singing. Let somebody else do that. You know, you get those kind of things, you know. But I've never had an old head, you know, as we would call it, an OG, tell me that they just wasn't fucking or feeling my music. You know what I mean? And I think it was like, I think for me, knowing where I came from, and just paying respect, you know what I mean? Like, I ain't got nothing but love for the way I was brought up and how things have happened. And I think, like, just shooting straight, you know what I mean? It's like, it's my experiences and my experiences only. Like, I'm not trying to speak for the next person, you know what I mean? And that's the angle I'm always going to approach it. I ain't trying to speak for the whole Cambodian community, the whole Cambodian population. I'm not trying to go out there and be an activist and be a protester, like, you know what I mean? I want to make music that everyone could relate to, and I want to bring change and awareness. And that's the angle I'm always going to come from. But yes, I have gotten, you know, some hate, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, who don't, you know, I mean, it gets discouraging at times, but I've just learned to put the blinders on, man, especially if you're passionate about something. Like, I'm not, it would be hard when someone would say something like, Cambodians shouldn't rap. You know, I did a performance, you know, a while back, and I was a part of a culture show, you know, that had nothing but like traditional dancing, you know, traditional ceremonies, celebration, blessings and stuff. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to grace the stage and perform some songs, and it wasn't perceived well, you know. I don't know if the audience just wasn't feeling it. And then, you know, you see comments like, I don't know what rap has to do with Cambodian culture, or, you know, things like that. Like, those type of comments, they hurt, because it's deeper than that. You know what I mean? When you start to dissect it and you start to look into it, you're like, man, where is this coming from? And then when you see it more enough, you're just kind of like, okay, you know what I mean? But just put the blinders on, man. You know, there's power in music. That's the beauty of it. So obviously, you know, if someone's going to have something to say, you know, about what I'm doing in my work, it's probably because they didn't listen to my music, you know? So if I could encourage anything,
it would be for someone to really take the time and listen to my music, because I feel like my music is me inside out. You know, everything I say on my tracks, that's like who I am. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just as real as I can be with it. So it's like, if you want to know anything about me, you'll find out through my music. You know, so I wouldn't know, for one, like, if someone was to hate, or if someone's not refusing to understand and not trying to get with it, for one, I would already know they're not listening to my music. You know what I mean? Because music is so powerful on that level. Like, once you listen to it, you can comprehend what a person is feeling, what they're going through, without you even being there in the same room. You can just hear the lyrics and you just feel it. You're just like, boom, you know what I mean? But I mean, I would just encourage, you know, understanding, you know what I mean? Like, giving someone a chance, you know what I mean? And it's hard, because, you know, in today's society, we're dealing with so much. You know, we're dealing with trauma, we're dealing with mental health, we're dealing with hate. I mean, it's just everything comes up every day. Everything is new every day. So it's so much to unlearn, to learn, you know, and I would just, you know, encourage everyone to, you know, want to understand for themselves. I think that's how I would approach it. Like, okay, like, if you hear, you know, because I'm the type of person that's like, if someone's like, man, that material or that music is booty, like, shit's weak, you know what I mean? I'm not going to be like, oh, shit's weak because the next person said it. I would go and listen, you know what I mean? I would research and I would find out where that artist is coming from with that work. I would really want to understand it. And then again, like, that's that dual sword, you know what I mean? I can't expect the next person to be like me either. So if I could say anything to anyone who just doesn't understand, I don't know if I want to use terms like outsiders or anything like that. And that's not anything against you. Like, I'm just saying, like, if I could say anything to anyone who hasn't listened to my music, I would just say, give it the chance. You know what I mean? Find out for yourself. And if you really want to know me, if you really about what you're talking about, then just play my music. Then you would know. You would know what kind of person I am. You would know who I am just through my songs. Through my first bars, you would understand, you know? So I would encourage that. That's how I would approach it. I would encourage that.